And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to Tuesday's 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. How are you all doing? I do hope you're very well indeed. And it's dark and it's wet and breezy here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. I don't know what it's like wherever you are, but hopefully you don't happen to be outside, though many of you will. Thankfully, we have a great door out work crew that keep all the things going. But anyway, either way, you're well used to it. We are here to keep you warm inside at the very least, internally. And we've got a busy show over the next 3 hours. If you're able to watch it too, please do. It's going to be a very visual show, as we mentioned to Lee Gooch there. He's out and about at Dromore National School. We're looking forward to chatting to the students and staff there, and Lee bringing his own inimitable style to proceedings there. That's coming up around about 10:30. Just after 10, we've got the latest appeals and information for you first here on the 9 till noon show from Ungada Síochána, and so much more besides. We want you involved throughout the course of the conversation. If you're watching the streams, either on YouTube, Highland Radio News and Sport, which means you can watch it on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're across the Facebook pages and also on the X platform. Feel free to comment in that space. If you want to WhatsApp or text us, the number is 086 60 25000, or indeed you can call us on 074 91 25000. Caroline, or of course, researching and producing the show and assisted today by Katie. It's great to have Katie on board as well. Right, okay, let's have a look through the newspapers this morning. Lots of different stuff, as always. The Irish Times, Taoiseach rejects anti-Semitism charge by Israel. The war of words between Ireland and Israel is really hotting up. It has to be said, the more aggressive language coming from Israel. You will know that Israel has withdrawn its embassy from Ireland. It's closed it down. From what I can see, there's been no negative reaction to that, really, other than some that we heard yesterday from Daniel O'Dowd from the Irish-Israel organisation. Interestingly, though, Israel didn't close down its embassy in South Africa. Now, we joined a case in the IOC with South Africa, so South Africa are actually initiating a case against Israel for their actions. And we've had the embassy withdrawn from this country, but interestingly, I don't believe it's been drawn from South Africa. But Taoiseach Simon Harris has rejected charges of anti-Semitism by Israel's foreign minister as relations between the two countries continue to deteriorate. It comes as the government here confirmed that the US Chamber of Commerce raised concerns with it about the Occupied Territories Bill likely to be brought before the Dáil next year. Now, what's happening here is Israel has got very strong connections in other parts of the world, not least the USA, and it would seem that Israel is trying to exercise its influence in the United States, which potentially could have, you know, pretty serious ramifications for Ireland. But Mr. Harris last night pushed back against Israel's charges of anti-Semitism, with government buildings describing them as personalised and false attacks, and saying the Taoiseach remains focused on the horrific war crimes being perpetrated in Gaza, standing up for human rights and international law, and reflecting the views of so many people across Ireland who are so concerned at the loss of innocent civilian lives. It is perfectly possible to say what is going on is horrendous. What's happening to innocent people is horrendous, and not to be anti-Semitic. You know, I mean, and I think it's kind of it's kind of an unfortunate position Israel is taking, because it's not really justifiable, and it's not provable either, because, you know, what the problem, the issue people have is there is some anti-Semitism out there, of course, because, you know, people collectively are holding Jewish people responsible for the actions of Israel. But generally speaking, and from a national government perspective, there's a big difference between anti-Semitic and also being anti the destruction of life, which is ongoing over there. But we'll see. The stance that Ireland is taking is actually really quite brave, given the type of economy that we have, and given the influence that Israel has on other parts of this world. The ongoing issues at Holyhead are beginning to have knock-on effects on people. They have already and continue to do so. This is Tuesday's Irish Independent. Some flights have risen to over €600 one way from London to Dublin in the wake of the Holyhead port closure, with Ryanair admitting prices on a number of routes are rising rapidly. It comes as Junior Transport Minister James Lawless warned that the port, which was damaged during Storm Dara, could be closed until spring. Mr. Lawless said he was planning for a possibility that the port's ferry terminals would not open on Friday, warning that some passengers or freight would not be accommodated on alternative crossings. Around 150,000 passengers are hoping to travel on the Holyhead to Dublin route in the days leading up to Christmas. A one-way Ryanair ticket from London Stansted to Dublin on December 28th now costs up to €602.75. They have dynamic pricing built in there, the same as the hotels. So as the plane is reaching its capacity, the prices go up, as I say. That's just dynamic pricing for you. I hope that anyone of you listening, or those of you listening out there, don't have friends and family that you're waiting on. I presume they can, at this stage, there's enough notice, is there, to do alternative routes? I hope so. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: the family of a man who was murdered as he walked alone in a rural town have said society must ask itself who we want as role models for young men. The statement came after the family heard that the attacker boasted he had punched his victim like Conor McGregor in the UFC. The attack happened on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022, going into the early hours of November the 3rd. Victim Cian Gallagher, 26, died in hospital 8 days later. Maurice Boland, 37, of Bridgeview Close, Tallow, County Waterford, had pleaded not guilty to murder, but guilty to the manslaughter of Mr. Gallagher on Barrack Street in Tallow. And I have to say, there's a lot of toxic masculinity out there, particularly. I'm not a lefty either, by the way. What I'm talking about here is people that look up to Conor McGregor, see what he does. There's been a lot more instances than that recently. They look at people like Andrew Tate, who has a certain a particular view that he expresses quite an awful lot about women and where women's position is in life. And I suppose if you're drawing your influences from these people, it's inevitably going to affect your behaviour, isn't it? In the victim impact statement at the Central Criminal Court, the family said three young men who had stopped to help and protect Mr. Gallagher as he lay on the ground when we, as his family, could not, are role models when they demonstrated how they helped Cian. They exemplified the unselfishness and kindness Cian held dear and represented each day. These young men are role models that would that young people in our society should aspire to, they stated. Yes, an awful, awful crime, an awful loss of life. Not Conor McGregor's fault, I'm not suggesting that for a second, but as I say, if you're drawing your influences from people that do sort of show a bit of toxic masculinity, it is potentially going to have an impact. And unfortunately, and it's invariably men involved, we now have seven women murdered in Northern Ireland in 2024, just in those small six counties. This is according to the Irish Daily Mirror. A woman killed in a brutal and senseless murder over the weekend is the seventh woman in Northern Ireland to be slain in 2024. Women's Aid NI issued a statement asking anyone with information that could help the PSNI to reach out. It said Karen is the 25th woman to be killed in Northern Ireland since 2020, the vast majority of whom were murdered in their own home. She's also the seventh woman to be murdered in Northern Ireland in 2024. If you have any information that can help the police, please contact the PSNI. Women's Aid NI would also like to express, they say, their deepest sympathies to the family, friends and the wider Banbridge community. It's something we need to have, I don't know, a more of a conversation on as to why we're seeing so many women murdered, so many cases of domestic abuse, for the most part perpetrated by men, and be able to have a conversation about it where the reaction isn't, well, it's not all men. You know, of course it's not all men. No one's saying it's all men. Do men get abused and murdered too? Of course they do. But there is a particular problem. And often I think we're distracted sometimes by focusing on other cases which are much rarer and thinking, well, that's the only problem in this country, rather than talking more broadly about what's going on here and what role we as men as well and women have in, I don't know, trying to change behaviours. It's an ongoing piece of work and one we're involved in here at on the 9 till noon show. On to the Sun this morning, and Lucy Letby's legal team will appeal to review all her convictions, claiming expert witnesses changed his mind on the cause of death of three babies. This is a story that many of you, I'm sure, have followed, and it's been the subject of documentaries and programmes and what have you. And, you know, if you watch the documentaries, and I'm not suggesting for a second that this woman is innocent, but if you watch the documentaries, it is horrendous what she was found responsible for. And there seems there could be no alternative narrative to that, that she did this and she was guilty of it and convicted of it. But the UK nurse, who's 34, is serving 15 whole life sentences for murdering seven infants and trying to kill seven others. Barrister Mark McDonald told a London news conference that the lead prosecution expert, Dr. Jewel Evans, had allegedly altered his view about how the babies died. He said, remarkably, Dr. Evans has now changed his mind on the cause of death of baby C, I, and P. The barrister added, Dr. Evans had said to the jury that Lucy Letby had injected air down a nasal gastric tube, and this had led to the death of the three babies. This was repeated to the Court of Appeal, who may have been misled when they ruled on the application for leave against the conviction. So it looks like it's going to be appealed again, and who's to say what might come from that. The family's going through it all again over and over and over. Also another story that I've found remarkably interesting, and this is from the Irish Daily Star, and it's drones in America, big drones, drones the size of cars. And it's a real peculiar, it's a really peculiar one, because they're flying about the place, and the government, the US government, is saying they don't know what they're for. No one knows where they're taking off from. No one knows where they're landing from. Donald Trump commenting on it yesterday, he said he wouldn't say whether or not he'd been briefed by the Secret Services or whomever's responsible, but he said the US government knows what's going on and they should come clean. So can you imagine, you're living in your house or you're living in Letterkenny or any major town, and these almost car-sized drones with red and green lights are flying over your property, hovering around the place, and the police say, well, we don't know what they are. The army says we don't know what they are. The government says they don't know what they are. I mean, it doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense at all. And it really is quite a fascinating story. There's loads of them up in the skies all over parts of America. But I'll read the story as it's written in the Irish Daily Star this morning. The US government doesn't want us to know what's behind bizarre drone sightings that have left residents fearful, a US senator has claimed. John Brannick, who represents New Jersey, said it was time for officials to come clean and declare a state of emergency over the flying objects. Residents in this state were some of the first to notice swarms of drones in their skies last month, he told News Nation. And he said, whatever these drones are doing, the government really doesn't want us to know. There must be something going on that they can't tell us because they're so fearful of what the public's going to do when they hear what the drones are doing. What they must mean is they're more concerned with us getting knowledge and being afraid and information than taking no knowledge and having all these questions. There's no way the Department of Defense does not know what's going on, because in any other scenario, they'd be shot down, they'd be jammed and brought down to earth. No one's seen any of them on the ground. And as I say, the government is saying to some people that, you know, these are manned flights, that you miss seeing things. It's crazy. But anyway, it's a really interesting story, and I look forward to it coming to a conclusion. I'd love to know what's going on there. Right, WhatsApps and text 0860 25000. You can give us a call to 07491 25000. Coming up after 10, Community Garda information, the latest appeals and information first here on the 9 till noon show. Then we cross over to Lee Gooch at Dromore National School for some crack and entertainment. After 11, then we've got a special Christmas focused information on crime and how to avoid crime coming up to Christmas. That and so much more besides. So stay tuned here to the 9 till noon show on your Highland Radio. You may have heard on the news that Letterkenny is now officially the largest town in Ireland without a plan to be connected to the rail network. We're going to tease this out a little more with Steve Bradley, who's chairperson of Into the West. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you on the show. And it is as it's laid out, isn't it, with the news that Navan is going to have its link restored and Swords by 2035, which is just around the corner. That leaves Letterkenny the biggest town with no concrete plans in place.
Yeah, I mean, Letterkenny is probably the fastest growing large town in the state. Over the 6 years between 2016 and 2022, it grew by 17%. It's currently the third largest town, as you said, without any rail in the country. Swords is the largest. It's due to be connected up to Metrolink, which after quite a few years of delay is now moving ahead. And then it was announced very recently there that Navan, the second largest town without rail, it's going to have rail extended up from the M3 Parkway up to Navan Town. That's about 40 kilometres, so just a little bit longer than the distance between Letterkenny and Derry. So by 2035, all going to plan, those two places will have rail. And that means that currently Letterkenny is the largest town in the state without any plan for rail. And within a decade, it'll be the largest town without rail, full stop.
But we did get plans, did we not, earlier in the year, that sort of a strategic review that did suggest a link between Letterkenny and Derry.
Yeah, we had the All-Ireland Rail Strategy, which was launched in July. But it's important to note that that's just a set of recommendations.
And it also came with no funding as well, or incredibly a little amount of funding as well. So it's really just a talking document.
Yeah, but I mean, the important part of that document is for the first time, there's an official piece of paper which says that rail can and should return to Letterkenny. So people who thought, you know, it's a pipe dream. But luckily, the argument has been won. Rail should return to Letterkenny. That's pretty much accepted now. So the question then becomes when. Our fear is that the All-Ireland Rail Strategy, its plan is to reopen Derry Portadown first. And it's talking about that happening sometime after 2040. And then once that line is reopened, to then reopen Letterkenny. So we're talking pretty much the second half of this century before Donegal gets its rail back. And to make things a bit worse than that, not just the time scale, it means that Donegal's rail future is entirely in the hands of the Stormont government in the north. And we've seen that Stormont is politically unstable, it's strategically indecisive, and financially it's always constrained, whereas the south has a lot more money.
Well, listen, so, I mean, as well as that too, we can't get the A5 over the line. You know what I mean?
Well, the A5 had a very particular issue to do with legal challenges and the way in which it was handled. That was a very specific issue.
It's been caught up for different reasons along the journey. It's been ongoing for a very long time. But I take your point, Steve.
There are rail reopenings happening right now around the country. Foynesport has been connected up to Limerick. The second phase of the Western Rail Corridor between Galway and Sligo has been done as we speak. So rail is reopening right around the country. The one place where we don't have it, which we know, is Donegal. And the problem is if we wait too long, you know, another generation in this county will be condemned to grow up without rail. And we see the problem that creates in Letterkenny with the huge amount of congestion and traffic. Letterkenny has the kind of congestion you'd expect to find in a town two or three times larger than it is. So we need to give people a viable alternative, and that's what rail will do.
Yeah, and the thing about Letterkenny too, the traffic at the moment, it's not predictable at all. It seems to be constantly congested, whatever is going on, but it's growing, and the population of Letterkenny is predicted to grow greatly too over the next 10 to 15 years. In fact, some arguing that it has to, but the infrastructure is very strongly arguably not there. You talked about the responsibility, Steve, of us sort of waiting on what's happening in Northern Ireland. Like, we'd need to show intent down here as well, too. I would presume the best thing at the moment to do, if we were ever serious about having rail from Letterkenny to Derry, and lots of people would prefer it to Sligo or to Sligo as well, we've got the 10T road, which is scheduled to be built between Letterkenny and the border. If the Irish government were serious, or if we all were serious, I should say, about a rail link, surely accommodating a rail link adjacent to that development would save a ton of time in the future and money as well. It should be incorporated into those plans, surely to God.
Well, I mean, there'd be a number of ways to connect up Derry and Letterkenny by rail, and then clever people from myself would look after, you know, the topography and the route. And obviously you'd want to go through population centres like Manor Cunningham and Newton Cunningham in order to maximise, you know, the commuter benefit really for Letterkenny. And I guess on your earlier point, Greg, we are also pushing for rail to reopen between Letterkenny and Sligo, that Western Rail Corridor, to bring it all the way from Galway and Limerick right up to Letterkenny. But Letterkenny-Derry is a shorter route. It's recommended in the All-Ireland Rail Strategy, and it has the population, most importantly, to justify it. And what's great at the moment, Greg, is there's a real golden opportunity right now to do this stuff, to get on from talking about Donegal getting rail and to make sure it happens. And that's the 14 billion infrastructure fund that's been set up with the Apple tax windfall money. We know it's there. We know it's going to be divvied up early next year. And we know it's been dedicated solely for infrastructure. So we're making the case to say, look, Donegal needs a good chunk of that money. And a relatively small part of it would reconnect this county up to rail again and provide a good alternative to people, so the roads in Letterkenny don't have to be so snarled up because people have an alternative way to get around.
Yeah, because, you know, we have forced car ownership in this county. In other words, you need a car to get about, to live. There's just no doubt about that. And we're looking towards ambitious carbon reduction targets that it seems we're going to miss now. And we could end up in the not too distant future paying 20 billion euro in fines or in purchasing credits off other countries that have achieved those goals. You know, front load that money now. I'm not saying a railway link from Donegal to Derry would fix our carbon emissions, but it would reduce them and it would show intent to try and meet those targets and spend a bit of money that we're probably going to be penalised for into the future. Spend it now.
Absolutely. And if you look at the border is 500 kilometres long. There's currently only one rail crossing and it's in the very far eastern corner, you know, in the routes between Belfast and Dublin. And your listeners may not be aware, you would think that the greatest cross-border flow every day happens in that corridor between Dublin and Belfast, but it doesn't. 38% of all border crossings on this island every single day happen between Donegal, northeast Donegal, and Derry City. So the demand is clearly there. We're a very interlinked region. The border kind of doesn't exist for people who live in Derry, Strabane, and Donegal. Our lives are very interlinked. Alton na Gealtain Hospital in Derry is the designated cancer centre for Donegal. 40% of people who fly out of City of Derry Airport are coming to or from Donegal. We have ATU growing and McGee growing. McGee now has spaces on its nursing and medical courses, which have been set aside for students from the Republic. We have very interlinked lives here. We have a large number of people making cross-border journeys, sometimes multiple times a day, but there's no option for them to do it really anyway except a car. The buses aren't as good as they should be, and there's no real alternative. We need to give people a choice and an alternative way to get around.
Can you explain to me and the listeners as to why the Letterkenny-Derry connection is behind the Derry Port to Down route proposals?
I can't. I suspect it's a bit of Dublin centricism. I suspect the people who put this plan together are thinking, sure, people in Letterkenny will want to go to Dublin. That's the only place they want to go. And therefore, open that Derry Port of Down. And then if you connect up Derry to Letterkenny, they can go all the way through Port of Down, down to Dublin and up to Belfast. I don't think the people outside the Northwest understand the degree to which we are interlinked in this area. I don't think they've really understand the Northwest City region. The idea of that, you know, there should be a single functioning entity between Letterkenny, Derry and Strabane and that entire triangle. I think they just think, sure, those people up there, all they want to do is to go to Dublin, and that's why they should have their route after the other one. We would say no. There is such huge cross-border demand at the moment. There's such a rationale to connect Derry and Letterkenny. And I guess most importantly, we'd be worried about Stormont actually delivering Derry Port of Down anytime soon. If the South gets on and does Derry Letterkenny, it can constantly knock on the door and say to the North, look, guys, we've done our bit up here, because, you know, almost all of that route would be in Donegal. Only the last couple of miles would be in Derry. So the Southern government could say, look, we've done our bit. You guys need to get on now and open Derry Port of Down so we can have northwest connectivity down to Dublin and around to Belfast.
And most of the people I know would be more inclined to go to Belfast than Dublin, if the truth be told. But also, too, it's the traffic coming in the other direction. It would be huge for Letterkenny and Donegal, I think, in terms of the access into Donegal from this route to Belfast and wherever else it might meander.
Yeah, I mean, imagine you're an international tourist and you arrive in Dublin because it's our international gateway. You don't want to hire a car because, you know, we drive in the wrong side of the road and it's difficult and everything else. You just want to have a leisurely time going around Ireland. You know, you think, you know, Americans aren't keen on getting buses. Rail makes sense to them. They take out the rail map and there's this massive hole in the northwest corner of the island. They probably think, sure, what's up there? It can't be of much use because they haven't even bothered to connect it. So we really are missing out in the northwest on a huge amount of tourist potential. And, you know, it's also just everyday living, access to opportunities, access to work, to study, to training. You know, if we know that you mentioned the forced car ownership, Greg, and that's very true in Donegal. And, you know, not everybody in Donegal has or wants, has a car, can drive or wants to drive. And it's really important to keep those people front and centre of our mind. There's about between 15 and 20%, depending where you live. And that's a sizable number. And we're just failing those people. We're not giving them access to healthcare, to opportunities, to jobs, to training, because there really is, you know, the buses in Donegal are very scattered. It depends where you live. They don't go very frequently. There is no rail. You know, if you don't drive and you don't want to drive in Donegal, you are in trouble. But we know a sizable number, a percentage of our population are in that position. So, yes, it's about bringing tourists up, but it's also about businesses and where people live longer term. I mean, common sense will tell you that a resident or a business is much more likely, given the choice, to gravitate towards an area where infrastructure is good in preference to where it's bad. I mean, that's just common sense. So just think how much we're missing out in the Northwest by the fact that we are completely disconnected in the top corner of the island.
Yeah, just finally, a couple of people are pointing out, and I get it, that, you know, a relief bridge in Letterkenny, waiting four decades for that. Others saying that, you know, the more pressing issue is to get traffic around Letterkenny more quickly, you know, public transport, and there are plans for a town bus and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, the two things aren't mutually exclusive here, are they? I mean, you should be progressing improvements. It's not like, right, we're not going to build we're not going to build a railway link to Letterkenny. All of a sudden, we're going to build this bridge. It's not happening. And it doesn't mean we'll build this bridge and then we'll... The projects are not linked in any way, shape or form. And to give up this campaign because there's other infrastructural requirements in Letterkenny would be foolish. It'd be pointless because, as I say, they are all infrastructure, but there's no connection really, other than that if we had them all, life would be much easier.
Absolutely, Greg. I mean, firstly, the money exists. There's a very large sum of money. We're only asking for a small sum to sort the rail in Donegal. Secondly, the Donegal area was downgraded by the EU 4 years ago, so there's an opportunity for EU funding right now, which probably won't be available in the next 10, 15, 20 years when the area gets upgraded again. But you made a really important point there, Greg. People in Donegal should not clip their own wings. No other part of this island is ever asked to choose between rail and between decent rail and decent roads. They've got both. You go to Kerry, you go to Mayo, you go to Galway, they have both those
We're
things.
We're not even being offered the choice. We're actually proposing the choice ourselves, some people are, and then choosing something that's not happening either. Now, I know exactly. There are plans afoot for the 10T, but it's... You know, so we say sometimes that Donegal's the forgotten county. You know, you have to back yourself. If you're going to claim you're the forgotten county, you have to back yourself and not sort of be making these calls on behalf of the decision makers.
Yeah, I mean, we should never clip our own wings in the Northwest. Other people will try and do that for us from outside the county, in the civil service, even some politicians. Do not clip our own wings. We need decent infrastructure, whether it be road or rail. In the Northwest, we should go out and demand it. There's a sum of money there on the table, which is going to be divvied up quite soon, which could help get rail back to Donegal. The need is clearly there. There's an opportunity. There's also the opportunity for EU funding. Now is the golden time to do something about this. If we just sit around and say, oh, don't worry about that, let's do something else, do you know what? We'll probably end up with neither. Don't clip our own wings. Let's get the things we need in this county and ask for it ourselves.
All right, Steve Bradley, chair of Into the West. Thanks for your time this morning. Take care. All right, bye-bye. Any views on that? 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Okay, Deputy Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Piers. Thanks for your time.
Good morning to you.
You've raised the issue of the need for more respite services support for Donegal in the run-up to Christmas. Many people know because it's a lived experience for them. But where are the gaps? Where particularly could focus be focused?
Unfortunately, Greg, at this point in time, and respite's been a challenging issue in Donegal, you know, all year round, and have been down the years, and I've been speaking on your programme about this, but... At this time, we're actually, the gaps are nearly right across the county. We have a number of different factors that have coincided. Some of them are recruitment, some of them are HICWA issues, where work had to be carried out in different facilities for health and safety purposes, which has meant that services are being restricted or are simply not there in areas like Killybegs, Donegal, St. Joseph's. You have also Buncrana and Carindona. So there is a widespread of services that were already limited in the county now that are actually beds that are not not available. And this has put huge pressure on families. In some cases, families are at their wits' end. We've had situations where, you know, people are travel sometimes maybe to travel to a family funeral abroad and can't get respite for their loved one. We've other cases where respite has been planned and has been cancelled with very little notice. And others where there is routine respite, you know, every kind of 6 weeks. Respite's really, really important. I know you know this and your listeners know this, but this is crucially important to allow for the carers to be able to, you know, in some cases recharge their batteries, but in others it's about those occasions that they may have to go to, maybe a wedding down the country or so on and so forth. And that isn't happening. We've had people who had planned family holidays, and respite has been pulled from them, and this can cost them a significant amount of money. And it doesn't seem, you know, at this point in time, in the short instance, that there's going to be any major solution to it. There is work ongoing in different facilities. Killybegs probably going to come on stream first, and there's a work ongoing in other facilities as well. But there's a mixture of between work being carried out in these facilities and recruitment issues that have caused serious problems. And that's why we've asked the HSC I have yesterday in my meeting with them to look at any private capacity that may exist to support these families in the next while.
Short-term solution, isn't it? And also what we've had here on this program quite a bit as well is people being offered, you know, respite miles away. Do you know, if you're in a show and being offered it in another part of the county, and it's completely impractical, but on the face of it, it looks like they've declined it, but they just can't make it work for them. So that's also a factor in this as well. You mentioned about private resources. I mean, obviously, it's not ideal, because next thing you know, we have a story about the amount of money being spent on, I don't know, recruiting, you know, agency staff or whatever it might be. But in the short term, is there capacity there, do you think, in the private area to bring people into the facilities that have beds to allow some respite for some families out there?
So there's two answers to that, Greg, and it depends who you're talking to. When I raise this with the HSC, they're telling me that there's not private capacity, but then I talk to people on the ground and they suggest that there is the private capacity. So I'm not clear in relation to whether that exists or not. And it is always going to be just a stopgap measure in terms of that capacity. I think what's really annoying people, and the people who've contacted me, and it's from right around the county, is that, you know, there's false dawns over and over again. Like, there has been, you know, suggestions, for example, take Carndona, for example, and Pádraig McLaughlin has been raising this issue yesterday at the meeting as well. Like, that was supposed to open ages ago, but it still isn't opened, and it's, you know, they're talking about the first quarter of next year, the respite facility there, and people have been given false dawns over and over again in relation to some of these matters. And I think if people knew, you know, that at least that they're going to get the respite at a certain point and they could be certain of it, that would take some of the pressure off them. And it isn't as simple, I know, and I understand how the agency are trying to manage this. They can't magic up beds here, and they're trying to, you know, give people where they can. So they might be asking people to travel into Letterkenny. But if you have somebody, and, you know, it will suit some people and it won't suit others, if you have somebody who's got particular needs and they are getting respite regularly in a place every 6 weeks, to actually disrupt that pattern and put them into a new place could cause serious havoc. They might be in for a couple of nights, but by the time when they come home, it could have disrupted their complete pattern, and it would be very disruptive for them and the rest of the family. And this isn't just an inconvenience we're talking about here. These are people who, you know, in some cases rely on patterns, rely on familiarity, rely on, you know, knowing who they are. It's not an easy thing to actually, you know, particularly adults with special needs, to actually have them go to a new place. So it's really important that regularity is there at this point in time. And there are issues here that have to be addressed at a national level. One of the big problems here, Greg, is that HICWA have applied retrospectively all the new conditions, all the new standards for buildings. And look, we all want the best standards. There's no doubt about that. But every time a new standard comes out, all the buildings have to be brought up to that standard. And in the meantime, it is the patients on the ground, because all the work's been carried out at the same time. It's patients on the ground, it's families on the ground that have been left without the support. So we need to look at how we can manage this process better between the HSE and HICWA.
I mean, obviously, yes, when there is work ongoing, as you mentioned, the likes of St. Joseph's, it has to be done because those are the rules that have to be followed. But in terms of recruitment, is it clear in terms of how many vacancies there are and if those vacancies are being applied for? As you'd be well aware, there's been quite a lot of issue and some issues remain in terms of CDNT, but a different approach was taken to fill vacancies. And in fairness, staff numbers have increased, as far as I'm aware, in that area. So do we know if these positions are being actively advertised and if the HSE maybe is looking at other ways to try and get those, those positions to the people that might apply for them?
Yeah, there are vacancies being sought to be filled in positions where there are vacancies and the post has been allocated. But part of the solution, because of when we're dealing with any part of health, it's obviously integrated. So one of the things before you even need respite is you need home help, to help you in your home to keep that person at home so that they're not in a nursing home in a permanent basis and they just need a bit of respite then. And what we heard yesterday, because we know that there's hundreds of people waiting on home help in the county. There's people in hospital. I think there was only two yesterday that were waiting on discharge looking for a home help package. And one of the problems is the government have introduced a pay numbers cap, which is basically a recruitment embargo by another name. And because we in Donegal do not rely on the private sector in any significant way, and we're quite unique in relation to that, Greg, in terms of home health support. Most other counties, it's the large private providers that provide it, whereas in Donegal, it's HSE employees. And because of this play in numbers cap, then we are not able to recruit people in to provide these home help hours because the HSE and the government say you're above the hours that were allocated at the start of the year. In any other county, you would just take in agency staff.
But why is that different in this area? Because it's not only, we've heard these horror stories of people having to wait for someone else to die or for them to no longer need a home care package before they'll be allocated it. And then the hundreds of others that have been allocated additional hours but have been told open-ended that nothing's going to happen this year for you. You talked of other HSE areas using private staff. Why is it a different set of rules here? Normally, the problem is that we try and follow what's happening in Dublin and Galway and Cork, and it doesn't suit us. On this occasion, it would. Why aren't we doing the same as other HSE areas?
Well, we shouldn't try and do that, in my view, because basically what's happened in other areas is it's privatised, and it's not a good scenario, to tell you the God's honest truth, because they're basically on the clock. It's very, very rigid and all the rest.
You've no wait time in Dublin for a home care package. You might not get it here.
But the problem isn't they are taking in more private people to replace public sector workers. The problem here is public sector workers have to be recruited and allowed to be recruited into these positions. And that's the core issue. What we have is a stupid idea from government, which is they allocated the number of hours at the start of the year. If you pass those amount of hours, then you can't get any more. The person that lives over in West Donegal who's just come out of hospital and may have had a stroke a couple of weeks ago, it doesn't matter to them or their families that somebody else down the road got hours
but
3 months
also,
ago.
It also doesn't matter to them. It doesn't also matter to them whether it's public or private. You know what I mean? We want the home care packages here. And you're of the view that that's not necessarily a model that we want to copy. But if we want an equal level of service, well, even in the short to medium term, surely it's something we should be doing to alleviate the hardship of Donegal families.
Absolutely, and I've argued that in terms of respite, that we need to use private capacity. But what this conversation shows up is the stupidity of the government decision in terms of this cap. So the way this works is that they can't recruit extra people in to provide the home help services for people who need it, but they could employ private agency because they're not permanent workers. Mm-hmm. They'll actually pay more for the permanent agency, but just so they can tick the box that they're not recruiting an additional employee, then they're willing to pay more. That's what happens in other areas. It's just completely not utterly stupid.
A listener says, I've been on a panel for a HSE job for a year and the position is being filled with agency staff. They ask, how does that make sense? Okay, Deputy Pearce Doherty, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. If you have a view on that, 086 60 25,000. Connell Shufflin says, proper fair deal scheme for home care suited to the needs of the person that needs it. And lots of you talking about infrastructure. Coming up after 10, we have the regular Tuesday item, Community Garda information. I think it's Garda Claire Rafferty with me today. She's going to be running through the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána. Then looking forward to that, of course, but then looking forward to also heading to Dromore National School, our own Lee Gooch's. Hot-footing it within the confines of the law, of course, is hot-footing it to Dromore National School for the crack. Looking forward to hearing from the students and the teachers from there. Also, if you want to watch that, by the way, of course, it might not suit you. You could be at work, you could be in the office, you could be in the tractor, you could be whatever you're doing. But if it does suit you to watch that, because it should be good fun, and everything that happens on this show on a daily, you can watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick and pretty much every TV that's been bought in the last couple of the years. If you hit the home button, it's got the YouTube app on it. Open that up and type in Highland Radio. Give us a like and a share, and it's there for you to watch whenever you want. And you can watch back Monday night sessions last night, for an example. That whole show was streamed on our socials, live from O'Flaherty's Bar in Buncrana. That's all available for you to watch back at your leisure. So that's the kind of service we provide for you if you want to catch up that way. We're across Facebook, Highland Radio News and Sport, and Obituary Notices and Highland Hub, and on the X platform right across the world. Jet says, the irony that Israel has become more like Nazi Germany goes beyond belief. That's on YouTube. Mike O'Sullivan, good morning. Greg, have a good day. Mike, you have a good day too. Thanks so much for joining us. Dolores, one of the first in to say hello this morning. Good morning to you, Dolores. And Lisa Gallagher, thank you. Among the hundreds of people watching across the various platforms and directly from our website, highlandradio.com. A caller says, I recently had an experience at the ED in Letterkenny Hospital and can only say good things about it. I just want to say a special thank you to all in the medical wards, the care I was given. And I'm delighted you had that positive experience, which most people do. And there's a big percentage of people that don't. But important to mention the good stuff too. HSE still renting buildings lying empty in Dunloe and Dunfanaghy, not being used, a listener claims there. I have no reason to doubt them. On to the infrastructure. LOL, says the listener, build a bridge and trains. We can't even stop the water running on Lurgy Brack Hill. It's running down this morning and it's only raining a short while. I get where you're coming from. I know it can be hard to see how we could progress that far. Can our newly appointed politicians do anything in pushing this issue on rail, or are their hands tied regarding this? No, they're free to make any representations that they wish. Greg, people need to get real about road infrastructure. Our roads are in a mess. Why jump the gun talking nonsense? But again, you see, that's what Steve was talking. That's us clipping our wings. Why not seek it all? Why should we ourselves pick between road and rail? We're not being offered that choice. It's us ourselves that are saying, oh, forget the rail, let's fix the roads. Do it all, is the message from Steve there. Hi, Greg. Had to go to Letterkenny last Friday. It's a complete disaster to get around. It's no wonder so many people are staying away from it. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's well worth it when you get in. But there used to be periods of time, I remember, you know, where you would expect heavy traffic. And now it's snarled up everywhere. It's something's happened that's had a knock-on effect everywhere, if that makes sense. I don't know, quite know what it is, but something has happened whereby now at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 11:30 in the morning, you can experience snarl-ups. Years ago, I think it was Sinn Féin's Pearce Doherty who raised the question of a rail link to Donegal, glossed over by government. Now it's become popular with other parties. For all parties, I've done interviews with Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael senators, TDs in the past, very much in favour of rail links. Not contradicting you, I'm just saying that I have. Is there any sign of the respite opening up against soon? I presume they're probably talking about Carn Donna there. Early next year, we're told. I'm trying to get information. I'm trying to get information on that for you. I have a slight concern that it's being that information is being released in certain ways, which means it's going to be difficult for me to bring it to you if it's relating to Cara and Donna. But anyway, I'll get back to that a little later if I have to. It actually feels like the HSC want all frontline staff to be agency workers, says a listener. They have no pension or holidays to pay. Last one before the break. I've dealt with HSC throughout my doctor, nurse for home help respite for the last 10 years in West Donegal for a number of family members. Never experienced a problem. Everything I asked for was available. I'm glad that that was your experience. I really am. All right, stay with us. We'll be back after we bring you the news and obituary notices.